Hi, my name is Marcus, and this is a companion podcast for the CG Jung Help Desk Meetup Group. I host live events on Zoom every 2 weeks about the concepts and ideas of the Swiss psychologist Carl Gustav Jung. Every event, I give a presentation about the Jungian concept, so have fun with this event's topic. And I want to welcome you very much to a special event about dancing and movement. Very often I pick the topics because I have an idea, like I have an inkling there is something very interesting to talk about, especially when topics that have not been talked about so much before that I haven't seen anywhere else in regards to explorations of Jungian thought and ideas. And I think today's event will be very nice to understand some basic ideas about symbolism and how Jung sees symbols and certain imagery and how it can pop up in many, many different places and many, many different forms, but really find their commonality, which makes it then very archetypal, let's say. So it will be completely packed with examples. And I want to start first with the dancing part. And I want to start by telling a little bit from my past. When I was in my 20s, I was very much going into concerts. I was sometimes going to 3 concerts a week, driving all over Germany to see my favorite bands. And one of the nicest experiences you can have at a concert is when the energy is really good and people start to dance or starting to having pits. So when you go to rock concerts and music of the like, punk, metal, alternative, and so on, or new metal, you have these very nice mosh pits. And you have also these very nice circle pits, which means people running out in a circle. And I didn't think so much about it back then. Running around in a circle is actually a lot of fun. So children already do it, but it really creates a high energy atmosphere. And it's, let's say, a fun way to move. And how you are in a pit, for those who are not familiar with that, it's a lot of people crashing into each other on purpose and you're sweating. Everything hurts, but it's great. It's a great way to experience music. And back then I didn't think about it too much, just as, this is fun. And it's only today that I think about, okay, there is something more, let's say, archetypal about this or deeply psychological. And another thing that I've noticed very much in the last years, and maybe it might be fitting also to your experiences, techno raves have become very, very popular. So they're popping up everywhere. Yeah, I have here a picture from a rave that I took in a church for Halloween. That was a lot of fun. And I don't go so often to raves, but I have a lot of friends who go to raves. And interesting enough, the people that I've been in circle pits and mosh pits before are now going to techno raves. And I'm in Berlin here, so techno raves are really the part of the core experience of being in Berlin. And it hits now the zeitgeist. People want to dance and move to music and experience music. And it is happening. And then for the third picture here, I have Fight Club. And this has a very specific reason. And there we already go in the Jungian sphere. Because Jung says, we as humanity, as civilization, right now have a general problem, which is we are very much in our head. What we do is very abstract, very intellectual, very, let's say, up in the air. What's a little bit coming too short is the body. And mind you, this is Jung talking about this 100 years ago. This is before the internet, this is before TV, this is before telephone. And Jung already says, people are way too much in their head, they're not enough in nature. So I think he would be kind of surprised how things have developed, that it's even more abstract now. So I think it's not a coincidence that people look for these very bodily experiences with music, with movement, with experiencing their body in a kind of controlled and safe way. A concert or rave is a safe space for certain experiences that are set up to people experience these things. So where is the psychological need coming from? And I have a quote here from Jung about that. For the fascination of the soul is nothing other than a new self-reflection, a return to fundamental human nature. It is no wonder in this process the body which had long been undervalued in comparison to the mind, is rediscovered. And this is what the movie Fight Club to a large part is about. This is about people starting to fight each other because they want to experience their bodies, they want to feel pain. And interestingly enough, this is also fitting to mosh onto circle pits. And this is not completely new. Like, human beings have been doing this already for a very long time. And one thing is, of course, the experience of the bodily. The other thing is to put yourself in a specific, let's say, state of mind, to get into a specific mood, to get in contact with something inside of you. We as human beings, we have psychological needs. We have a whole psyche that, similar as a body needs salt, the psyche also needs certain experiences. And Jung says, we with our consciousness and how we do things, we are always running away in one direction and ignore other directions. So we kind of need to remind it of the other parts of us. For example, the body, which is why we're looking for bodily experiences. This can also be in sports, for example. But this part of reconnecting with our human nature and with our instincts is a big part of human culture and tradition. And one is the carnival. And especially what Jung talks about is the carnival in the church. Meaning, in the church, you have very strict rules and you follow everything. But there was this tradition that once a year, you could go absolutely crazy. You could go past the boundaries of normal behavior, which means, as Jung's saying here, animal dances, to get back into nature. And this is actually not something that the church liked, but it was something very, very pagan. And the tradition kept going for hundreds and hundreds of years. Similar, like the Christmas tree has nothing to do with Christianity and everything with our pagan roots. Similarly, the church could not really get rid of it for many, many hundred years. And I want to go into that in this quote. And the carnival, we take on other forms. We wear animal masks, perhaps, or perform animal dances. It is a sort of orgy in which people re-identify with a being of a lower mind and of a lower morals. And by that, they touch nature again. In Europe, all sorts of things happen during the carnival. It's a pretty wild time. Also, it is the carnival in the church, which was the last remnant in the medieval church of ancient times, when they celebrated the Saturnalia, the spring mystery of Athens, which were even quite obscene. So what we have in, let's say, human history is a kind of building on top of stuff on each other. Like, Christianity is built on the things that happened before, even to the point where you have the Mithras cult. And a lot of churches where the Mithras cult was before, they built churches. And if you go back even earlier, we are hitting the Greeks, and very much in mythology and the Greek pantheon, the certain moods, emotions, instincts are symbolized by deities, which is pretty much fitting to the human experience of an emotion or thought. When you have anger, when you have lust, you experience this as something that's taking over you. And in Greek mythology and in a lot of cultures, this is that symbolized through gods that take, let's say, possession of human beings. You have this a lot of when you, for example, read the Odyssey or the Iliad, that it is very often that Ares got into someone, right, and caused them to do something. And we would translate it today in modern language and, they were gripped by a certain emotion. But it's more sophisticated in mythology, and this is why Jung looked into that, because you have this network of idea that connects not only to, let's say, the abstract thing of emotion, but also of imagery and behavior and everything that's, let's say, associated with that.
Hi, Markus here. If you want to go deeper into this topic, there's a full presentation available as a video recording with diagrams, quotes, and visuals for a deeper understanding. The recording is available as a one-time purchase on Gumroad, yours to keep. All right, back to the topic. Enjoy.
And the god for, let's say, partying, for dancing, for getting back into nature is Dionysus, the twice born. So it is the god of the body and of ecstasy and a kind of orgiastic enthusiasm and intoxication. Things that are also said to be happening at raves and at concerts, where we try to get into an altered state of mind, to get removed from our daily lives, but also to get in contact with something else. It's again, when the body is missing salt, you will feel it and you will create a certain hunger for something. Similar when something psychological is missing, you will try to get that back in your experiences. So I have a quote from Wikipedia. His wine, music, and ecstatic dance were considered to free his followers from self-conscious fear and care and subvert the oppressive restraints of the powerful. Also, so the Dionysian mysteries had this purpose of re-identifying man, re-establishing his contact with nature. This is original in our theater. So it is really about connecting people, and the cult of Dionysus, they also had these dances. They had these almost frenzied happenings where, according to legend, also like frenzied groups of women would tear apart men as a kind of sacrifice. So to, honor Dionysus, who himself was also, according to mythology, ripped apart and spread throughout the world. And Jung sees there already, interestingly enough, a stark contrast, because Jung says we have a conscious attitude and we always have an unconscious reaction to that. And Fromm says consciousness is something that needs to be taught, developed, and very much worked on through time and effort. And it is then that the counterbalance for that is created in the unconscious. Meaning, even in Christian thought, when the consciousness is very Christian, the unconscious will be then very pagan. And this is then Dionysus as a counterbalance for that. You find that even in Nietzsche, where they have the Apollonian and the Dionysus as Dionysian as opposites to each other. That then can pop up in dreams. So Jung has some dream analysis that he did for some patients in some seminars, where he then has the Dionysian images in the background. For example, you have a barren church which is overgrown with wine stocks and grapes, which is very much similar, associated with Dionysus. So I want to go back even further. And for that, I want to talk about a topic that Jung talked about, but I normally have a little bit of like qualms talking about it, because I think it can be easily misunderstood and it has to be dooming the word. And this is not the foil for that right now. So sorry. 1 second. Good. So we have rituals. We talked about the carnival. We talked about the Dionysian myths. We talked about something like raves or even circle pits. And what Jung sees there as a basis is that human beings try to structure experiences and initiations to bring people into contact with something, but also to bring something forth in people, an experience, an emotion, right? People go to a rave or they go into concert to have an emotional experience. Similar with a theater, something is brought out in them. And so this is what culture is then about, to give people a safe way to experience those things, to get into contact with their psyche, with their experiences. And Jung says this very much has to do also with our conscious attitude, how we are doing things. And this is what this quote is about. If you have to do something which means nothing, you have very little consciousness of it. But in the ritual act, you are supposed to be fully conscious of what you're doing, more conscious than of anything else. For instance, you can eat a piece of bread and drink a little bit of wine with very low level of consciousness, almost in a dream, but you cannot take the communion in a dream. You must be conscious. So basically, this is also what I'm showing here on the right side. The communion in the Christian church is really when the bread and the wine turns to the flesh and the blood of Jesus Christ, which is distributed in the congregation. Interestingly enough, very closely aligned with the myth of Dionysus, where that he also gets spread around in the world. So we have there some archetypal similarities, up to the point that the church even argued like, oh yeah, Dionysus was a kind of precursor and preparation for Jesus. This is how everything gets connected to everything. But yeah, the idea here really is you can live your way a life in like two ways. You can do it very actively, you can do it reactively. And Jung says the things that are happening there psychologically are very, very, very different. If you let something wash over you, or you take part in the experience, similar with a dream, when you dream something and you forget about it immediately, it won't have an effect on you. But if you contemplate it and try to understand it, Jung says there's a lot of things to get there. Again, it has to do with this kind of counterbalance, because it's the other side. A dream and the unconscious always provides the other side to consciousness itself, meaning you will get new information about yourself, your situation, but you need to be aware for that. You need to be conscious of that. You cannot be unconscious, just passive and reactive. So what a lot of rituals are about, that you very with intent and attention and care do something. You have this a lot, for example, in Chinese or Japanese tea rituals, which are incredibly hard to learn, take an incredible amount of time, and are very, very detail oriented with a lot of rules. And this is to make people then very aware of what they're doing, so that it can become part of consciousness. Only the things you're paying attention to are being integrated in your being. Otherwise, they just pass you by. Of course, you're having a little bit of a balance that you need there, because you're getting people in contact with things in, let's say, a ritual that they normally don't are in contact with, which is their instincts, which is their human nature. So we have our rules and our society and our structures in a way to kind of remove us from nature, also to remove us from our instincts, because they can be overwhelming. But at the same time, you have to connect people to that. And Jung talks a lot about the overwhelming impression that the unconscious and the forces there can make on people, on the consciousness. So this is what this quote is about. Instinct is never individual. It is always legion. Whenever you are living according to the instincts, you get into the collective. You cannot help it, because instinct is collective. Yet, if you don't live in that instinct, your life is wasted. So when you live with instinct, you are all right, yet you are collective. And the example is what's happening in mobs, for example. You can be, of course, in a concert, and you can be, or at a rave, you can be carried away by the emotion, by the experience, by the shared commonalities with strangers that you don't know. But at the same time, when you have a mob that's, I don't know, rioting or making crazy things, this is also an emotion gripping people, but causing them harm. And this is what I meant with that we have certain institutions to allow people to experience that safely. They need to experience it, but at the same time, it can be overwhelming. So it is always a balancing act. And now I wanted to go into what's happening even earlier in human society and psychology. And this has to do with the name primitive. Jung uses that term really a lot. And this is why I also want to talk about it. But also today, this is connotated very often negatively, especially when we talk about it in context of behavior or of people. So to give context, what primitive doesn't mean in Jungian psychology, and in quotes, should you encounter it, it doesn't mean a specific group of people, even though he talks about primitives, but it's not like that he singles out single groups of people. It's nothing that is negative or worthless, and it's also nothing that should be abolished or distinguished or extinguished more. So when Jung talks about primitive, what does he mean? How it's supposed to be understood? For him, it just means earlier. It means we as humanity have a certain psychological development that happened over time. And primitive means just stuff that happened earlier or was more prevalent in the past. For example, he would call the Roman Empire primitive because of their psychological state, which is, again, not a value judgment. It is rather saying, okay, this means earlier, but not backwards. Also, he says, our psyche is in certain layers. And I think people know this and heard this before, that we have a reptilian part of the brain, which means there are certain structures in the brain that are so old that we share certain commonalities with other animals with that. And we have the same in our psyche, meaning we have different layers, different structures that serve different purposes, and they're always with us, and we kind of have to deal with them. So even today, big parts of our psyche, Jung would call primitive, again, which is nothing negative, but rather describing a certain way of functioning. And this is a very symbolic or superstitious, pre-scientific way of thinking. Again, meaning scientific does not mean good or advanced or anything. It's just a different way of thinking. So a lot of things that made sense to our ancestors, naturally, are very, very unusual to us today. So, for example, the understanding that dreams are not supposed to be taken literally, but rather symbolically, you would not need to explain that to people in the past. But today, you need to go more into that. So a lot of art and culture that was created in the past makes perfect sense if you think symbolically, but today we're rather confused. For example, the virgin birth, right? Or resurrection. And if you look at those things literally, you're then rather confused by what is happening. But there's a part deep in our psyche that kind of gets what it means. So Jung says primitives, again, meaning not a specific group of people that is living anywhere in the world, are all quite natural psychologists, precisely because they are not psychologists. It happens to them. Unfortunately, the views they hold correspond to my views, so that's why people think I'm a primitive and I practice demonology. Jung really goes deep in the human psyche. He tries to fundamentally understand it, and he says this primitive part is an extremely big part and a part that is most people not aware, because we are, again, very far removed from, with our consciousness, what human nature and natural living actually is like. Us now sitting in front of a laptop or a smartphone, conversing over the internet with voices that we hear from somewhere, this is not a natural thing. So it is then that we need to reconnect with our body, with our nature, and do that in structured experiences. So this is just to give a little bit of context for the next quotes when Jung talks about primitive. And of course, we have dancing not only since raves and mosh pits, but human beings have been dancing for a very, very long time. And how Jung approached that and thought about that is really interesting. And this is why I wanted to do the event. So primitive dances are often circular in form. There's usually a fire in the center. And in the dances I've seen, the outer circle is formed by the warriors, the inner circle by the women, and the circle in the innermost center by little children. So we already have this. It's moving in circle. It's forming a circle. It's acting in a circle. And further, before they go hunting, for instance, or to make war, they celebrate certain ceremonials, particularly dancing, which gets them into the mood of hunting or of warfare. Then, when they return, they must celebrate another rite, which gets them out of mood of those activities. So it is this concept of saying we have a ritual, and the purpose of a ritual of custom is to invoke certain things in the people participating, in a certain mood, a certain emotion, a certain pattern of behavior, an archetype that can be brought forth through circumstances. And these circumstances are designed in the ritual. And further, they dance, perhaps. And dancing is not a pleasure to them. It is really work. They dance till they are exhausted. And even they never apply energy for any other purpose, they surely apply the energy and patience for magic purposes. So such a thing only works when you produce it, and you must not produce it cheaply. So Jung saw there in the dancing a huge effort. And I want to go into there deeply what this effort is about. But I also want to talk about what the circle has associated with it. Because people moving in a circle, again, circle pits in the beginning, people dancing around a fire in the very, very far past, and of course, even today, we have traditions that also have circular movement in dancing or just moving of big groups of people. So I fear the picture of Mecca, where every Muslim in his life at least should go once to move around this very special place, which I forgot the name about. But we also have in Germany this tradition of the Maypole for springtime, when people erect a huge pole to then dance around it with ribbons to make it colorful, to signalize spring and rebirth, again, something very Dionysian. And we also have it in mythology, where this is the story from the Bible of the Israelites trying to take Jericho. And this is what this quote is about. "That's why the ancient Israelites long ago marched around the walls of Jericho with their siege tactics failed. Finally, the walls of Jericho gave way. They run around the city seven times, so they tried to take it for a very long time. They failed it, so they walked around it seven times, and then the walls gave in." Again, if you take this literally, this does not make a lot of sense, but symbolically, this is very interesting. Also very interesting, there's a band called Walls of Jericho, and they really like circle pits. I know because I went there to the concerts. So everything is mirroring everything. So to this point of moving in circle and charging the center with energy, you move in a circle around the center or around a person, which means concentrating of attention upon the center and heaping up of mana or medicine power in it. So the thing about a circle is that it has a center, and moving around it puts attention on that. And Jung sees this fractured out and expressed in many, many different forms. Here we have it in action, but we're going now in a more psychological direction, meaning circular movements we find in many, many different ways. And this is what I meant in the beginning from this will be a very interesting elaboration about the symbolic meaning of a circle and how it can express itself in different ways and how people interact with it. So in this situation where you perform the ritual, and I hinted at that before, Jung sees psyche as something fragile, especially our consciousness. We can get tired, and we will get tired. Like, consciousness is such a big, effortful act that we need 8 hours of sleep every day. And even if we concentrate on something new, we tire then very quickly and we have to rest and we kind of have to turn off our minds doing something mindlessly. And this is because consciousness is a fairly new thing and it can be easily overwhelmed with unconscious forces. Jung sees a really big part for psychological trouble, for example, schizophrenia or psychosis, that unconscious forces overwhelm consciousness and break it apart. So again, it's this balance of being conscious of something and at the same time not being overwhelmed by it. And this is what this quote is about. "It is possible to lose consciousness to a certain extent during play and then to become identical to this play. So this is also dangerous. We can, for instance, see when primitives perform their dances. Eventually, they become identical to their roles." So you can have people that go into a frenzy when they're completely caught in a mood. This is when you have a mob and they start trashing things and they start to burn things and break things down and so on. And people are kind of overwhelmed emotion. And Jung says this is actually one of the biggest dangers of modernity, because we have a lot of security in our society. We have a lot of provision and food and shelter and safety and all these different things. So he says the biggest dangers are psychic contagions, psychic epidemics, meaning people are caught by an idea and they act on that, and we have large groups moving. When people are fascinated by all the isms like communism and fascism And suddenly a lot of people die because people are caught by certain ideas, certain emotions, certain moods. So Jung says, man is always a bit possessed. He is necessarily possessed in as much as his consciousness is weak. In a dance, they easily can get into an ecstatic condition in which they are no longer themselves. And knowing this, they even apply that knowledge in their rites. They induce that condition. It's also a positive thing when you are not yourself, when you need to go beyond yourself, you need to transcend yourself. But again, there's a danger. And one way to see it, and this is like really interesting, and this is why it's very important to understand that when Jung talks about, let's say, primitive psychology, that this is still a big part of our psychology. We kind of have to do the same thing. We have to drum up motivation to do things because we are also not. Like, think about when you make plans or have goals, like you want to go to the gym regularly, you want to read every day, you want to change your diet, you want to pick up a new hobby or start a new career, you want to apply for a different job. It's very, very easy not to do those things, but you kind of really want to. So you have to bring yourself in the mood. So in the past, this might have been dances, but now we kind of, this is a very fast, very far externalization of that. We internalize this now more through different techniques. But this is again about the dances, this quote. First come the dances, he must dance hunting, whip himself into the mood of hunting until he is thoroughly filled with the idea. He identifies also with the animal he hunts. He becomes his own buffalo and he is a hunter at the same time. And there's a nice progression, and this is one of the big reasons why I wanted to do this event. It's the next quote. It is a classic device for impressing certain ideas or activities in the mind, and what has to be impressed and firmly organized in the canalization of libido, libido meaning mental energy. So it's not for Jung purely sexual. It is more the psyche is a machine that runs on a certain energy, and that's libido, and libido must manifest in a certain way. For example, when you have creative people, they really need to get this energy out and to a painting or a drawing. Otherwise, it stays within them and might cause havoc there. It grows. It's like the sun. Libido is like the sun making things grow into a new form of activity. Since the rhythmic activity can no longer find an outlet in the act of feeding after the nutritional phase of development is over, it transfers itself not only in the sphere of sexuality in the strict sense, but also to the decoy mechanisms such as music and dancing, and finally in the sphere of work. So what we have is, and this is an idea from psychoanalysis and from Freud, and Jung has a very strong psychoanalytic background, that you have certain drives, instincts that can be formed and shaped through society to express themselves in different ways. So Freud was pretty extreme with that, bringing back everything to sexuality and making then a very vague definition of sexuality. But bringing it to the rhythmic activity, for example, of feeding, that this can express itself in other rhythmic activities, such as music, such as dancing, or like work, which is then again interesting, especially when you had a lot of manual work or movement work. People like to listen to music automatically, instinctively. It's just that to say, oh yeah, that fits. So whoever worked in a factory before, if people have the chance, they will be listening to music, especially if they hone in on something. So the idea here is really, really interesting. Because what is work? Like, what is motivation? You want to do certain things and you try to invoke, let's say, images. You want to have a goal. This is what manifesting today, for example, is a lot about. You say like, what do I really want? How do I picture my life? And you kind of let your thoughts and ideas circle around that. And you talk with people about it to get a better understanding and better grip about it. So you're mentally circling around a certain topic to infuse it with energy, to bring it to life. So I hope it becomes clear what I'm trying to do here with the different examples and the different, let's say, stages of human or areas of human activity that then express the same kind of idea. And Jung, of course, brings this very much into psychology and psychotherapy because he was a therapist, he was a psychologist. And what is happening there inside of people? And this is what this quote is about. From this, we can conclude that analysis actually involves a circumambulation, so moving in a circle. One could say that without further ado, that the technique, as we understand it, and if one can speak of a technique at all, is observation, that is, contemplation. For this reason, I believe that one should not undo or destroy a dream that one does not understand by tinkering with it. Instead, it should be contemplated from all sides and filled with libido, and that it begins to live and finally give birth to its inner meaning and tendency. And that way, one performs what the mandala and the circumambulation mean. So this is when you, for example, have a problem. You have a problem, you talk with people about it, and you might not be completely aware what the problem is. So you're kind of walking around the problem. You try to check, okay, what is this? What is that? Is maybe this wrong? Like, are you're feeling bad. You have feeling yourself in a bad mood. And it's like, oh, what am I actually unhappy about? What is bothering me? What's the problem? And this is what other people help with. They try to also observe and watch, okay, is this maybe a problem? Is this maybe a problem? Is this maybe a problem? So you're trying to cover territory and you're running around the problem, trying to understand it and bring it forth out of the dark. Like, oh yeah, this is actually my problem. This is what I did not understand. Similar when you try to figure something out, like a mystery, like a puzzle, you're also going around in circles, trying to bring in the pieces and say like, okay, this all points to something. There's something in the middle that connects everything. So I have to apply my mind consciously and willfully and purposefully to bring this forth, to bring it into the world. And suddenly it pops out as an insight from the unconscious in consciousness, where we can then observe it and understand it. Like, oh yeah, now I get it. That's the problem. Oh, this is what I've been looking for. And so interesting, because Jung makes this connection to, oh, that's people running around in a fire. This would be the very literal approach. Oh, people are running around a fire because it's a celebration. And the deeper psychological understanding is like, oh, this is expressing something fundamental about how humanity works. And this is how Jung sees culture as an expression of our psychology. Same with mythology, with Dionysus, and these rituals and traditions that we have, that it all comes back how our psyche functions. That means observing these external things gives us an idea, an impression about how we work internally. And Jung mentioned mandalas, and this is a very big part of Jungian's thought and ideas about the self, because a mandala is always a circle. And Jung sees this, again, circle expressed in many, many different ways, in symbolism and imagery, but again, also in behavior. Not only in human beings. He writes, "When a herd of elephants are frightened, they push the females and the little ones inside, and the males, the warriors, are outside. That is the most natural way of performing a protective mandala." This, again, mirrors what he described before about the dances of the primitive tribes. Warriors outside, children inside, it's a protective circle. And the mandala itself also is a protective circle in the psyche. He says when people are in a huge distress and they find their lives very, very chaotic, the psyche sends a kind of symbol to reassure them that a structure and an order is possible. And he says that's the mandala. And there's really different kind of mandalas. We know them mostly as pictures, as I have it here, as a round circle with like circles and areas inside, and can also be square. But Jung says that's not the only way how to conceptualize a mandala, but rather a mandala is also acted out outside through behavior. This is what this quote is about. "It is surely a mandala, and that it always means a protective circle against the surrounding fire, against that thing which mixes one up with worldly events or with the bewildering facts of one's surroundings, which sweeps one along in a stampede, for instance." Again, we draw psychologically boundaries where you say, this is us, this is not us. And this creates a safe area in which we operate. And Jung calls that consciousness. And what we try to do, we try to bring in all these things that are good and positive from the unconscious, but also to keep out the bad things, the overwhelming emotions and instincts, that they're kind of there and integrated in a positive way, but they do not take over the ship, let's say. Similar with a garden, right? A garden is a piece of cultivated land, meaning I have a border around it, I have a wall, and inside everything is structured to a certain, let's say, hierarchy or order. And Jung says this is what we try to do in our psyche. We build our consciousness, we develop to then bring in all those unconscious contents, all these ideas in a harmonious, positive manner. And Jung says this is so fundamental in our psyche that even blind people know this. So this is what this quote about. I don't know how a blind person dreams of mandalas. Mandalas are also formed with the hands, danced and depicted in music. When a mandala is created, all the circular and square forms known to humans play a part in it. So we act out mandalas. And if you want to find mandalas in your own dreams, it's then very important. It can be very imagistic. It can be as a picture is here. But really pay attention to things that are in a circle or they move in a circle. That took me also quite some time to find out, because Jung talks about it at the very end of some seminar, that it is not only a circle itself, but it's moving. Mandalas are moving. And that already helps to recognize a lot of them. So what is like a very big psychological movement that's happening within us? Jung sees the psyche as structured very, very much. And there is a center point to our psyche and to our acting, and that is the self. So we as the ego, as you can see here in this diagram, we are on a path around the self. And the interesting thing about the self is actually us if we would have integrated everything that is us. So how we are right now is not how we will be in the future. We will be more in the future. And like the ultimate endpoint of everything that could be us is the self. And he describes that the ego is kind of circling around the self. So self-knowledge reveals the fact that the soul's natural movement is not in a straight line, unless indeed it have undergone some deviation. On the contrary, it circles around something interior, around a center. And also, from him and his own experiences from his life, during those years between 1918 and 1920, I began to understand that the goal of psychic development is the self. There's no linear evolution. There's only a circumambulation of the self. Meaning, the journey that we have psychologically in our life and the actions that we do, it revolves around a point. And this point we are not necessarily aware about. We kind of have to pay attention and be conscious of that what we do points to something. There's a commonality at its core, and we're going around it. And we kind of have to bring this forth. We kind of birth the self through our actions, through the process of individuation, and enrich it with energy through our actions, and consciously bringing there something forth. And this is what I find so cool. And this is why I was very excited to talk about this topic, because you can connect there a lot of different things of human actions, behavior, history, mythology, symbology, dreams, and so on. And I want to summarize now what we talked about now. So the symbol of the circle is ubiquitous. That means we find it in many different spheres of human action and also experience. And the purpose of that is that there's something in the middle, and this something has to be brought forth. And this can be expressed in people moving in a circle, for example, when they dance or they're in a circle pit. But people also circulate around their thoughts about a topic and contemplate. And we in our cultures have this codified and formalized in rituals, in imagery. And the most beautiful thing in here, I find, is this is how we live our lives. Ideally, when we do it purposefully and with attention and with care, we kind of dance around ourselves. We dance around today, now, around our future selves, and bring that forth through our actions, if done right and with enough care and attention. And I want to thank you for your attention while I was circling around this topic, trying to bring it forth and trying to make it interesting and understandable to you. And I hope I succeeded. And I'm very much looking forward to the discussion part right now, where we can then share and exchange some thoughts and ideas.
This was this event's topic. Thanks for tuning in. If you liked today's presentation, consider joining others in supporting the help desk with a donation on buymeacoffee.com. And if this episode meant something to you, share it with a friend. I help others to find this podcast more easily by rating it in the podcast app of your choice. And of course, you're more than welcome to join the live discussions after the presentation part during the events. The links are in the description. See you next time.